Enemy of the state.
An enemy of the state.
Enemy of the state.
Dank Podstash.
You're listening to Enemy of the State's Dank Podstash. Visit thedankpodstash.com, where you'll find our shop, calendar of events, and more. Become a patron or bitbacker and join us in our private Discord server, where you'll have access to live shows and post-show Q&As.
Business owners, you can advertise on the Dank Podstash, reach a larger audience, and make more sales. Just email us at dankpodstash@gmail.com for more details.
Awesome. Well, for everybody watching live, and I'm sure we'll be joining soon, welcome, fellow enemies of the state, to Enemy of the State's Dank Podstash. Today's episode featuring Hody Johns and Jack Neeson representing capitalism and mutualism, respectively, in a debate. Real quick, today's episode is sponsored by my good friend Dave's business, Atlas Automotive, and that's in Las Vegas, Nevada. The proceeds from his sponsorship go directly to the fundraiser for Daniel Johnson that you can find on all of our pages and on the Dank Podstash page. So thank you very much to Dave. If you're in the Las Vegas area and you need any kind of automotive work, make sure to check out Atlas Automotive, and that's Atlas Automotive NV on Facebook. If you haven't checked it out yet, you can see on our overlay, we have a website. It's thedankpodstash.com. We also have a Discord. We want everybody to jump in the Discord. We're getting a lot more active there than we are on Facebook, because Discord's a really great type of social media. It's really awesome. We have an awesome mod, Conrad Chaos, in there. What's up? Thanks for doing that. And if you are a $5 a month patron or bitbacker, you have access to a private chat in there for future private YouTube recordings of the show, and access to a Q&A with us, the guests, whoever's on the show after the episode. So make sure to hop in there, check that out. We appreciate your support. And real quick, we work with Shane Radliff over at the Vanu pod, or a podcast, to just do some networking and help each other out. And Shane has a special deal. If you go to libertyunderattack.com, you can take 10% off your order by using the code DANK10. So Shane over there, he has books focusing on self-liberation, freedom strategies, solutions, and more. His current books, which I have right here, are the Second Realm Book of Strategy. Get that up in the camera. Hashtag Agora. The Sedition, Subversion, and Sabotage Field Manual Number 1. And then Shane's very own Vanu. So definitely get your copies of those. Check out libertyunderattack.com. And they also offer assistance to new authors throughout the whole publishing process, which is editing, proofreading, formatting for Kindle, paperback, full-service audio production, and more. Check out Liberty Under Attack Publications. Share your story. Find your freedom. And as usual with me today is David Ballantyne. What's going on, man?
It's going on. That's what's going on. Sorry I wasn't here last time. I was sick. Still recovering a bit. I got a cough, but luckily I won't cough too much at you. I don't have to talk a lot this time. So that's great.
Nick made a mistake earlier and said enemy of the stakes. And yep, the stakes are high today with the debate between capitalism and mutualism with Hody and Jack. And, I guess I'll just let them, you know, take it away, introduce themselves, and do some opening statements. I believe Hody is going to go
first. Real quick,
so
I just want to make
it
clear that, you know, forget about Zizek versus Peterson. This is actually the debate of the century right here.
Hell yeah.
We make those two clowns look little. That's for sure.
Let me, before you guys jump in, let me just let people know about the format real quick. We got quick opening statements with basic definitions of capitalism and mutualism that you guys are going to provide. You got 5 minutes each for opening statements, and then we're going to jump into a few questions. Same thing, 5 minutes each and a chance for rebuttal. And then we're going to let you guys just have at it. So, Hody, if you want to start out, go for it.
All right, let's fire this up. Unlike most debates, I'm really looking forward to this one. Jack is a good guy. He's got a lot of great, he's got a great voice for a lot of liberty values. We are friends. So if you're listening to this as a capitalist and say, which one's my enemy? Just knock that right off. Give him an open voice. If you're a true capitalist, you'll understand that the best ideas exist on the free market. And so you shouldn't have to make Jack your enemy. You shouldn't have to make him anything. If I'm the better, you know, if I have the better idea, then I'll win. And it's no biggie. So we both agree that the current system of top-down economics is a complete joke. We both believe that businesses should be operated the ideal way to operate a business, and that we shouldn't be giving all our power to somebody at the top. There was a time when capitalism actually meant, as Henry Ford said, let me find this quote, there's a rule for the industrialists, and that is make the best quality of goods possible at the lowest cost possible, paying the highest wages possible. And it's a total lie to think capitalism was anything otherwise. Adam Smith, as well as Prudhoe and Tucker, promote statelessness. From previous interactions, both our systems are voluntary. So there's no reason for this to be an angry debate. We both believe that you can choose either one. This is going to be a buffet for the people who listen. But we also don't have to waste our time in definitions like many other debates, because I like every definition of capitalism. Anarchists, we like the semantics, anarchy being no ruler. But let's talk about the semantics of capitalism. Capit, meaning head. Like head of cow, because that's the history of capitalism. In the fall of feudalism, they said, well, if no lords own these cows, who gets to own the cows? And simply, the merchants responded, you do. The problem is that other people want to make that and say, yeah, maybe not a government owns the cows, but instead of a you own the cow, we want to make it a we own the cows. And that turns into a democracy, which leads to dictatorships, and we've seen that happen several times. This expanded with cows and went to wheat and everything else. And this led to a great deal of prosperity in Europe. And the dictionary definition is great as well. An economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit rather than by the state. Think about that for a second. Not just an economic system, but also a political system where the state doesn't have control. When you say you're an ANCAP, you can just say you're a cap because you have to be an anarchist in order to be a capitalist. So if you are thinking of a statist capitalist, by definition, you're not a capitalist. And so any capitalist that attempts to use the force of the state to get their way is doing capitalism wrong, literally by the definition of it. Lastly, we can talk about the philosophical definition. It's just six things. Are you getting paid for your work? Are you allowed to own the things that you work with? Are you allowed to own the place where you sleep? Are you allowed to do business with whoever you want to do business with? Are you allowed to say what prices your property goes for? And are other people allowed to do the same? Literally just those six things. Capitalism's not actually a system. It's actually an entire set of observations. Adam Smith said himself, I'm not actually creating anything. I'm just noticing what successful people do in the world without the coercion of a state. He called his book The Wealth of Nations, which is similar to saying the wealth of communities, which is not to say the wealth of countries, because states will try to make themselves powerful. But he noticed that the most powerful groups were the ones that were actually free of the coercion of the state. Mutualists call capitalism the philosophy of misery, not because capitalism actually creates misery, but because it allows misery. In capitalism, you are allowed to choose your freedom. When asked why Marx was more successful than him, the founder successful than him, Prudhoe simply admitted, I'm tough with French here, but here we go, personae ne licest porte volontari, meaning no one volunteered. Simply, he confessed that people were only accepting his society with the coercion of the state. Warren said the same. Even when with properly educated men and after seeing several of his colonies voluntarily disbanding, he began to implement voting systems and even taxation in order to keep them operating, because the individuals who joined didn't stay for long without some type of power and regulation in effect. There's a myriad of reasons mutualism sucks horribly, but its most basic level, the most major reason mutualism sucks is because it has one single goal, total equality, not just economically, but also, and I quote, intellectually and physically. Unique to mutualism as opposed to just regular socialism is that labor is divided. But in order to for plumbers and miners to be intellectually equal, they are not allowed to discuss the keys of their trade. They must achieve equality in intelligence through division. That is also a quote. By rule, the people are forbidden to teach each other anything about trades. You might ask about art and recreation. Prudhomme made very clear there's no room for either in a mutualist society. Athletics, art, culture have innate hierarchies. And so it is, quote, absurd to separate work from intelligence. All labor is physical. All tasks must be physical also, and art comes at the expense of industry, end quote. That's according to him.
Very good. Thank you,
that's
Odie.
That's my biggest beef. Yeah, go ahead.
Time. All right, Jack. Your opening statement, 5 minutes.
All right. So first of all, I think it's important to note that I'm not really a Proudhonian. If you're gonna attack Proudhon, there's a lot of shit that Proudhon said that I completely disagree with. He was extremely. I mean, the guy was a misogynistic anti-Semite as well. I mean, we could go into a whole lot of shit that Proudhon said that I completely disagree with. When I approach mutualism, I approach it more in a Tuckerite fashion, in the tradition of Benjamin Tucker, which is more egoistic and looking to expand, provide the most liberty for the most people. So if we're talking about mutualism, you know, strictly from an economic standpoint, we're talking about first and foremost the main principle of socialism, which is worker ownership and self-management. All right. So this is worker ownership of the means of production and self-management through direct democracy within the workplace. This is democratization of the workplace. It's important to understand that there is no liberty without power. Liberty and power are inherently connected. OK, if you have more power than I do, you have more liberty than I do. So if we want equal liberty, we need to have equal power for every individual. In the workplace, that comes down to one man, one vote. Right. So that means that if we are going to decide where we are going with our enterprise, every individual worker has equal say in what we are going to do with our enterprise. This includes, you know, what we're going to. You know, how we're going to price certain products on the market. This includes, what we're going to do with the surplus that comes from the labor, from the product that we produce, how we are going to invest it back into the enterprise. So, you know, basically mutualism is market socialism. It's free market socialism. We're talking about, and I know in conversations with Hody in the past on Facebook, he has said that he would actually prefer worker co-ops to top down bureaucratic capitalist enterprises. So if all we're talking about is the mode of production, then Hody and I may actually have a lot of common ground here. If we're trying to give everyone, everyone that equal liberty within that mode of production, it's important to understand that while yes, everyone here is against the state. I am an anarchist. I oppose the state. I fucking hate the state with a passion. It's important to understand that the state is not the only hierarchical institution that limits liberty. When I go to work 40 hours a week, for those 40 hours, 8 hours every single day of my life, I do not have full control over my labor. Someone else is telling me what to do. There is an authoritarian. An authority telling me what to do. You do this or I fire you. Now, the ANCAP rebuttal to that is, well, if you don't like it, you can go find another job. Cool, I can go find another job where someone else tells me, you do this or I fire you. And then if I decide that I just don't want to work for someone who's going to order me around, then what's the alternative to that? I guess I starve to death? Now, there are some fundamental contradictions with capitalism. I find it interesting the Henry Ford quote there that Hody provided. First of all, you have to understand that there is a conflict between the boss and the worker. There is a conflict between the capitalist and the worker. The worker wants to earn the highest wage possible. The worker wants to get paid the most possible. The capitalist, the fundamental necessity of capitalist business is high income, low overhead. That means your costs have to be as low as possible. That means you want to pay the lowest wage possible so that you can have the highest profit margin. Now, the problem with this is the lower the wages are, the less the buying power the worker has on the market. And it's important to keep in mind that consumers are generally workers. The wealthy capitalists do not consume the way that workers consume. Workers, because they are working on a wage, tend to spend their money right away as opposed to saving it. And so workers are actually the consumers. So the capitalist has a problem here because he needs to pay the workers as low a rate wage as possible in order to limit that overhead. But he also wants prices to be as high as possible in order to keep that profit margin up. So what happens when you lower the buying power of workers? Well, who is there to buy the product? And so this is, I guess that's my time.
That is time. Thanks,
I didn't get into everything, but that's fine.
We'll get into it. That was excellent. Excellent, both of you. All right, let's move into first question here. This is something I hear a lot, and I've seen both articles, videos for, and supposedly debunking it. So the question that we're going to throw at Hody first here is, does capitalism require infinite growth? And if so, can it be sustainable?
There's nothing that capitalism requires, simply that it allows infinite growth. You can grow as much as you'd like. I'm glad that you bring this up, because this is something that mutualists have always had a problem with, because they said, and in fact, much of the time, other socialists, in fact, Marxists' disagreement with capitalism is that it's not sustainable, that eventually capitalism will just collapse upon itself. The problem that Proudhon had was the exact opposite, that eventually capitalism would grow so much that they wouldn't be able to produce enough population to keep up with the technology. And this is something that, well, I disagree with. I appreciate that he evaluates that we would get so advanced that we'd need to just keep having kids to keep up with everything. What he did notice, and this is correct, was that every time we replaced a dangerous job or a labor job with some type of machine, it actually created more jobs. People were worried that machines were going to put people out of work. But the more automation that came up, there were actually more jobs created, because you had to take care of not only those automated machines, but it freed people up to do other things, including the arts. That's why, of course, mutualists have such a problem with the arts. Normally, economists have to accuse socialists of falling behind on technology and living like just barely above the minimum standard. In this case, I don't even have to make the accusation, because its founder brags about it and lays it out as the singular most core goal of mutualism. Quote, he is content provided he has bread, a pallet to sleep on, and plenty of liquor on Sunday. Any other condition would be prejudicial to him. Unquote. So to say that literally the bare minimum is as much as we should have, and if you have more than food, a place to sleep, and booze, then you're getting too much. And there's just too much excess, and you'll end up collapsing on that excess. The nice part about capitalism is my lifestyle is not tied to anybody else's. I can have the bare minimums in capitalism, but I'm also able to get more than that. And so there's no reason for me to attack somebody else as long as I'm satisfied with my living condition. I have the control to say, hey, I control where I sleep. I control my job. I control my work. I control my capital. And that's okay to me. The funny thing about that quote where I say plenty of liquor on Sunday, you say maybe he's just being hypothetical about the liquor. He's actually not. They suggest actually quantifying entertainment and leisure and turning it into liquor, because liquor is actually a product versus other entertainment, which creates some type of hierarchy. Jack suggested he has a real problem with natural hierarchies, not just in economics, but also in life. And this is, of course, a core tenet of mutualism, is that there's these hierarchies that exist. My supposition here is that you would have to use a coercive force to stop them from existing, to stop a man from being the tough guy in his household and protecting his family and giving, you know, his wife that same right, or vice versa. If they decide on that role, you actually have to go in there and break up that family and make them equal in that role, because they might naturally just choose to exist in that hierarchical way. And capitalism contends that we should allow that to happen. Another quote, it would take but a few pages to contain the list of useful inventions. We should destroy the machines. unquote, talking about destroying locomotives, things that mass transport people back and forth. When you suggest, I'm not going to dodge your question, that capitalism will somehow collapse on itself because it's just grows too big and, you know, there's no end to it and this infinite growth eventually will crush itself, you just can't be more wrong. Because ultimately, if things start failing and not working out, well, you control your capital, not some business or something else. So if you see things not working out, you simply just won't take part of it. You won't take advantage of it. Because instead of your self-interest, in the statist point of view, you put your self-interest in the hands of the government. In the mutualist point of view, you put it in the hands of your coworkers. The capitalist says no one should be in control of their self-interest except yourself. As soon as somebody else gets to vote on your capital, what you do with what you have and where you sleep, that's dangerous. I don't care if it's a state or somebody else. No one should have that kind of coercive power over your life. The well-being of man is proportionate to the intensity of his labor. That's something that mutualism contends. I could not disagree more. Sometimes intense labor can be dangerous, can put you in harm's way. The capitalist contends the exact opposite. If we can replace these dangerous systems that would make us collapse on ourselves, then we should, and make it life safer for ourselves. Maybe the future I'm suggesting sounds a little like WALL-E, because it kind of is for some capitalists, but you get to choose to live that way. If you want to live on that ship with all your things covered, great. And that's all my time.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah, you have 5 minutes.
Okay, so once again, I'm not a Proudhonian, and I'm actually a writer and a musician, so I'm an artist myself, and it is Sunday and I'm drinking wine right now. So my position as a socialist is Proudhon was in many ways a reactionary and a conservative. In his time he was a radical. But if we look at him from the standpoint of 2019, he was very much a reactionary. All right. And so I think it's important to point this out. Now, in regards to automation, I'm all for automation. The only question is who owns the automatons, who owns the machines. If it's just so we can get into this when it comes to something like UBI, if we're talking about Yang, right? And his UBI. This is a technocratic position from basically straight from Silicon Valley, where, yeah, we have to give everyone $1,000 a month because automation is going to start cutting away at jobs. And so we still need consumers to buy our shit, right? And so that's where UBI comes in, and where UBI is actually fundamentally authoritarian and fundamentally anti-liberty is the fact that it is actually it's placating the working class. It's kind of keeping them out of class consciousness by just bribing them and saying, here, well, you can still buy shit. As far as excess is concerned, I have no problem with excess, so long as it comes from labor. I think Hody and I would both agree that anything that you earn is based upon your labor. The problem is that there are many people who have become very wealthy on the labor of others, not upon their own labor. Or they just inherited a bunch of wealth and were able to invest it and then get even more wealthy off of the labor of others. When it comes to, if we agree upon the fact that no one else should make decisions regarding my labor and the product of my labor, well, what does a capitalist do to the workers? That's precisely what a capitalist does with his workers, and it's unilateral. The capitalist makes unilateral decisions that the workers have no say in, all right, that have huge impacts on their lives. You know, the capitalist gets to decide where the business is going to go. And when a business fails because a capitalist made a stupid decision, all of those workers end up without a job. And all of those workers end up without the money to provide for themselves and their families. Now, what I'm suggesting is that every individual should have the power and the liberty to decide what is done with their labor. Now, obviously, there are a lot of interests here. There are a lot of interests involved. I'm not saying that the worker, that we keep the same capitalist structure, but the workers decide what the capitalist does. I'm saying no. Instead of that, we make the capitalist a worker as well, and we make every worker have equal power within the decision making in the workplace. That's what I'm suggesting. That's socialism. That's a worker cooperative. That is fundamentally what socialism is. The state and everything else is secondary. Now, when it comes to capitalism collapsing on itself, this has historically happened over and over and over again. This is why the state steps in. The state steps in because capitalism collapses on itself, and we have depressions and recessions. We have the quote business cycle that occurs. That's when the state steps in. Now, I would prefer there be no state, right? So we have to have something. We have to have a mode of production in which the state never needs to step in. If we want a completely free market, if we want, total liberty for everyone, and we don't want this authoritarian state, then we need a bottom up method, a bottom up mode of production in which, we don't have these collapses. We don't have these booms and busts. So the state has to step in. I mean, even people confuse the welfare state with socialism. The welfare state is fundamentally a part of capitalism. It exists because when you have people, when masses of people are forced out of their homes because they can't afford to pay for them, because they can't afford to pay rent, because they can't afford to pay their mortgage, when you have masses of people that are homeless and starving, what do? They get violent and they take what they need in order to survive. That's why the welfare state exists. It's a product of capitalism. It has nothing to do with socialism. But I'm kind of ranting now, so I'll...
Hey, perfect timing.
Word.
All right, so the next question, Jack's going to get a chance to go first here. excuse me. I said I wouldn't cough. Differences between the current systems and stateless systems. Take it away, Jack.
Okay. So elaborate on that real quick.
What would be the difference between our current system and the system, the stateless system that you are advocating for?
I mean, the main difference is that there would not be basically unilateral political and economic power that comes top down, right? Everything would basically be grassroots from the bottom up. Instead of having this hierarchical structure that we have now, where you have, obviously politicians make the laws, but who motivates them to make the laws? Who basically pays them off to make the laws? Capitalists, all right? So what we're looking at is if any political or economic decision directly affects me, I have a say in it. We don't have that in a republic. We don't have that. We can now, there may be some sort of need for representation on bigger issues that affect more people. There may be some need for some sort of representation, but that representation is always held accountable. Any representative that would be elected could be taken out of that power immediately if they weren't properly representing the interests of the people who initially elected them, which we don't have now, obviously. You elect a representative and they can do whatever the fuck they want after they've been elected, right? And they generally bow down to the interests of corporations, is the way that our current political system works. It's oligarchical in that way, basically the more economic power you have more political power because you are able to pay off these politicians to make the decisions that you want them to make. Now, Hody, of course, would say, well, that's cronyism, right? That's not capitalism, that's cronyism. But it's important to keep in mind that the more economic power someone has, the more likely they are to try and seize political power. And so cronyism is actually a fundamental part of capitalism. Now, laissez-faire, if we want to say that we ever had laissez-faire, it began and ended based upon whose interests it served. Right. When laissez-faire, when the semblance of laissez-faire that we had in the Gilded Age stopped serving the interests of the wealthy, that's when the markets became less free because they had the power to tell the politicians what to do because they had that economic power. So what we're, you know, the fundamental goal here, once again, I think we're both coming from a standpoint of most liberty for the most people, right? Most individual liberty for the most individuals. If we're coming from that standpoint, then we have to recognize that power is inherently tied to liberty. Once again, the more power that you have, whether it's economic or political, the more liberty that you have, because that there's more that you can do with that power than someone who has no power whatsoever. And so we have to analyze, you know, all of these institutions in a way that that recognizes the connection between power and liberty. And I know Hody had said something earlier. This is kind of off the question. I didn't get a chance to respond to this. Hody said something earlier about me being against natural hierarchies. Of course, I'm not against natural hierarchies. But what's a natural hierarchy? How do we determine this? If we're talking about, you know, a doctor having this natural authority because they know what's healthy, what isn't, they know how to do surgery. Well, fine. Of course I wouldn't be against that. I don't think you need to have a democratic vote about you know, what kind of surgery you should have. I think you should trust your doctor in that regard. He is a valid authority in that regard. But we need to analyze each of these hierarchies in order to determine what is legitimate and what isn't, what is justified and what isn't. And it is on the authority itself, the burden of proof is on the authority itself to prove that its authority is justified. The state can't do it. A capitalist can't do it. Okay? These authorities cannot justify themselves. So anyway.
Cool. Just under time.
All right. So let's unbundle a little bit here. Jack and I agree on a lot of things. There's a lot of wrong things going on. He correctly identifies many of them. The problem is when he attributes it to capitalism. The reason I started off using every conceivable definition of capitalism possible is because it specifically states you cannot have a state. He points to all of these structures in which capitalists decide to use the state. That's wrong. And the other thing is they are set up within a state structure. The idea that we attribute the problems in America and these market economy crashes to capitalism is a gigantic joke, because literally The Wealth of Nations was written in 1776 while we're having the revolution, didn't even get popularized for the next 20 years. It traveled along like the Silk Roads out east. We didn't even hear about it. We heard some whispers and tried to adopt a few things, but we had no idea what we were doing. We even introduced a wage system. This is something that I think Jack and I might even agree on, that the producers who make things got not just a say in their product, they actually got a portion of the results of their product. Can you imagine how much workplaces would improve if you not just get a minimum wage, but a share of what you actually create and a say in how that's sold or what services that provides? You would not only care about the quality of your work, but you'd care about the price that it's sold at. And that you say, hey, this is why these unions were formed. Unions, some capitalists might be rolling in their graves right now to hear me say this. Unions were actually promoted by Adam Smith. Seizing the means was actually something promoted by Adam Smith. No duke or duchess should be able to own your field. You should. No collective should own your field. You should. The means should be firmly within your control. Here's the reason Henry Ford's right. Might be confusing to people that are mutualists and socialists. Why are we paying the highest wages possible? Because simply, without a state coercive structure in place, your workers will go somewhere else if you're not treating them right and paying them high enough. They'll go somewhere else. And this is what was happening. This is the revolution that took over Europe, that put people in homes, gave them access to the incense and the luxury items. That's why they call it the Silk Roads, is because they got to dress themselves in silk. Not just the kings and queens and all their nice things, but the common man, the average person. They seize the means. They got a say in their production. The reason capitalism doesn't result in these monopolies as is often the contention is these cows, well, you sold them to somebody. Now you don't control the cows anymore. everybody who you sold cows to also has cows. As soon as you trade one chicken, you no longer have a monopoly on chickens. You probably didn't have one to begin with because you'd have to own every chicken in the whole world. That's the beauty of capitalism. It spreads it out. And as soon as somebody wants to undercut your chicken price, your gasoline price, your cow price, whatever that price is, they're going to go there. As soon as someone tries to pay a higher wage, your employees are going to leave and go over there. Jack's right. There's a structure in place that says, yeah, sorry, I guess you can just quit your job and go somewhere else. That's not capital. That's not capitalism at all. That's something that Adam Smith firmly rejected. The idea that we would pin this on capitalists when capitalists themselves have hard rejected this idea. Yeah, there might be a few internet trolls that you borrow from, and maybe that's why you hate capitalism, but that is fundamentally against all of the definitions that I use for capitalism. Look, I don't have to suggest what a mutualist society is. Let's return it to the question that was asked. What does a mutualist society look like? How's that different from what's in place? Look, the Nazis were putting quotes by Proudhon and posting them on their walls. Now, I get it. You don't want to defend Proudhon. I'm not going to lock you into it. You are free to say what you want. But he founded it, and he said that the purpose of mutualism is to make sure that no one even has the potential of being unhappy. Look, that might sound noble, but it's actually a very dangerous and scary society when you put the ability for you to be happy or sad in someone else's hands. This is what it looks like. Look, you made a lot of accusations about how capitalists tend to turn into these big, structured, awful systems. How about we look at what mutualism turned into? Marx borrowed from Proudhon and not the other way around. He said, hey, that mutualism is a great idea. I read it in the biography. And Marx said, I'm going to take that. I'm just going to add some statism. And what did we do? We got Nazi Germany. We got the USSR. We got the People's Republic of China. Those three were the biggest murderers of human beings in the last century. So you don't have to hypothetically think about what a little too much capitalism might do and try to pin that on somebody else. The biggest disasters in the last century have all been because of state ratified mutualism. Yes, you and I both agree that we need to keep the state out of it. But ultimately, the state taking over capitalism and trying to use it that way has led to a lot less danger than the state taking over mutualism and murdering everybody.
Okay, real quick, I want to touch on a couple quick things.
Go for it. We'll put in 2 minutes on the clock here.
All right. First of all, we need to ask, why does the minimum wage exist in the first place? It's not just because bureaucrats thought it was a good idea. All right. The New Deal itself was social democracy. It wasn't mutualism and it wasn't fascism. It was social democracy. The purpose of a minimum wage to begin with was to appease the workers, because during the Great Depression, FDR was worried that there was going to be a fucking workers' revolution, and he wanted to stop that from happening. Because the economy was so unstable, he wanted to do whatever he could in order to save capitalism. And that's literally what he said. He said, the most important thing that I did as president was I saved capitalism. Quote from FDR. Now, if you want to tie Proudhon to Nazism, there is a connection there when it comes to third positionism. There was a movement that basically took the ideas of Proudhon and tied them to nationalism in Germany. And there is the German true socialism, which Marx actually talks about in the Communist Manifesto, which is a reactionary movement and a fundamentally nationalist movement that Marx actually said, yeah, this is garbage. The Germans don't know what they're talking about. They're misinterpreting French socialism, right? But there is a connection there between Proudhon and Nazism. Now, trying to connect Marx to Nazism, that's it, just insane. All right, who were the first people that the Nazis locked in camps? They were Marxists. All right. They were Marxists, they were anarchists, and they were social democrats. Those were the first people that the Nazis targeted, because they knew that that these were, generally speaking, internationalist movements. These were not nationalist movements. These were movements of workers who were looking to better their own way. And the Nazis didn't like that, because that creates social unrest, right? Nazism is not socialism. Let's make that fundamentally clear. We cannot I cannot attack that bullshit talking point enough. Nazism was radical right-wing anti-capitalism. Now fascists are only anti-capitalists where capitalism actually gets in their way. The thing about fascists is they believe in a hierarchy that is stagnant and can never change, okay? So the problem with capitalism from the fascist perspective is that there is still some form of upward mobility. All right. If you don't want the Jews to be at the top, if you don't want black people to be at the top, if you don't want immigrants to be at the top, if you don't want gay people or lesbians or trans people to be at the top, then you have to do whatever you can in order to stop them from that upward mobility. And so that is why the extreme right hates capitalism. That's their critique of capitalism. It has nothing to do with critiquing with class analysis per se. It has to do with, hey, we're the Aryans. We should be at the top of the hierarchy, and we're going to do whatever we can in order to maintain that power at the top of the hierarchy. If that means that we ban unions, if that means that we throw people in camps, whatever it takes, that's what we're going to do. And that's why they're anti-capitalist. They're not anti-capitalist because they believe in liberty or because they believe in equality or because they believe in solidarity. They're anti-capitalists because there is still some form of upward mobility under capitalism. And so they don't want that. They don't want black people being able to become wealthy. But anyway, sorry.
No, that's
great. I think I went over my.
If you guys would like to continue down this, go ahead. This is very interesting.
I only need about 30 seconds to respond to all of that. The Nazi Party was actually called the National Socialist German Workers' Party. So let's not forget the socialism.
Yes, the DPRK is the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. They're very democratic as well. I mean, just to say that because they call themselves National Socialists, that they were actually socialists is completely missing the point.
Sure. But no, it is the point, because the thing is they perverted your philosophy, right? They took the words of Proudhon. They plastered it on a wall. They said, you guys love this crap, right? And they put it up there and they abused it.
They
your accusation against socialism was, look what the state does when they get a hold of it. I'm telling you, look what the state does when they get a hold against yours. It's just a fair comparison. The second part, and this is even easier, he talks about FDR and where the minimum wage comes from and all that stuff. Look, let's go even further in history. Let's look at some people who thought they were capitalists that like thought the minimum wage might be a good idea, or that wages at all were a good idea. You're way too late if you've gone to FDR. Let's go all the way to Frederick Douglass, somebody who said, oh, yeah, wage system sounds great. We actually get the term wage slavery from Frederick Douglass when the state instituted, hey, you got to pay these people this amount of money. And he realized very quickly how awful it was. It's bad. People should be able to control the results of their products. That's something that we agree on. And so I only need a quick rebuttal, but there.
Okay. Well, so let's make sure that we understand that in the 19th century, the Republicans were actually the left wing party in the United States. Okay. They're not now, obviously. There's a lot of actually white nationalists in the Republican Party today, right? I mean, we can talk about, you know, the way the parties flipped and during the civil rights movement and stuff like that. But I mean, in the 19th century, the Republican Party was the radical. I mean, they weren't as radical as like Karl Marx or as Benjamin Tucker or as Lysander Spooner. They weren't radical quite to that effect, but they were the left-wing party during the 19th century, and the Democratic Party was the right-wing party during the 19th century. And yes, I agree that the term wage slavery actually came from people like Frederick Douglass and the radical Republicans, because they recognized that if you're working for a wage, you're not owning the product of your labor.
There you go. Right? All right.
So basically your labor is tied to a wage, and you're not actually free, right? You're a wage slave. Spooner has a great polemic where he talks about, yeah, we freed the slaves, but now we're tying them to the land and tying them to wages, and they're basically still slaves. You know, nothing really changed that much. I mean, wage labor is a fundamental part of capitalism.
Ah, See, now here's an I would hope we were talking about this. The fruits of your, you do deserve a wage. That wage does not have to be in currency. That's something that the state will force upon you. You are able to, a wage, you're able to receive, you know, a result of what you work for. So if I am in a shoe factory and I do X amount of work and we make X amount of shoes, I'm you know, Y amount of shoes, I'm entitled to whatever X amount of shoes that would correlate. You know, I'm entitled to those things. That is something that is supremely capitalist, and it's been lost on modern capitalists. They cling to the status quo. I get where you're coming from. You're talking about a lot of ANCAPs, people that love the status quo, those people that want to close our borders to protect these, you know, certain programs and you know, they don't realize they're protecting the welfare state by doing it. I get where you're coming from, because there are people who call themselves capitalists that do these things. But it is literally from founding to observation to philosophy to definition, anyone you want, that is fundamentally uncapitalist to actually pay somebody a minimum wage. It requires a state to step in. Smith saw it. A lot of early capitalists saw it. It is wrong. It is wrong, wrong. This is why people look at America and say, well, this was capitalism, right? Well, like I said, from our founding, that's not what we based it on. So this idea that minimum wage is capitalist is just, yeah, I'm with you on that one. It's wrong, but it's also not capitalist.
Well, I mean, so I think we have a lot of agreements here, but there is a semantic issue. Okay. If so, my understanding is that the first use of the term capitalism was actually as a derogatory term by classical liberals, right? Classical liberals actually used this as a derogatory term. Adam Smith himself was pretty anti-landlord, and landlordism is a part of capitalism as we know it as well, right?
as you know it. Yeah.
So I mean, socialists would say it's about there's a distinction between private property and personal property. So your personal property is decided based upon occupation and use. Like, you occupy this space, you use this tool, because you are the one using it, it belongs to you, right? That's not private property. That's personal property. Now, when it becomes private property, when you say, "Hey, I own this machine, you work it, all right, and I'll pay you a wage, and then I'll take the surplus value of your labor and keep it for myself." That is private property. And so that's a fundamental distinction that socialists make that needs to be understood. Like when people, you know, it's like the toothbrush meme, right? Like a lot of ANCAPs will think that, like, because I'm a socialist, I want to seize their car or their home or their toothbrush, right? And so it's become a meme on the left, like, yeah, I'm coming for that toothbrush. Of course I'm not. Of course I don't want your freaking toothbrush, man. All right? I don't want your car. I don't want your house. Those are things that you occupy and use. Those belong to you. I don't want them. I want to have those things for myself, but I'm not going to take them from you. That is your personal property.
I'm going to allow let's go back to the questions, because I'm eager to get through those, because I think you and I have a lot of disagreements. I just think you're wrong to attribute that to capitalism because of the definitions I've used.
Well, I think this comes down to, like, if you look at, like, C4SS, for instance, you know, the market's not capitalism, folks. They tend to lean, like, radical, liberal, mutualist, free market socialist. And basically their argument is that, and this is kind of a Tuckerite argument as well, is that free markets will necessarily turn into socialism because, you will allow workers to compete with capital. You'll allow labor to compete with capital. And when you allow labor to compete with capital, labor will ultimately win. And when labor ultimately wins, then you have socialism. Then you have workers' co-ops. This is something that even Abraham Lincoln pointed out, talking about the radical Republicans, right? That if capitalism is capital ruling over labor, okay? That is the definition of that's one of the many definitions of capitalism that I'm coming to. And so, like I said, this is
wrong
in many ways, right? See, this is semantic in many ways. We're not necessarily, you know, if we can agree that capital should not rule over labor, then I'll consider you an anti-capitalist.
But that's, I literally gave you every known definition of capitalism. You're just calling me an anti-capitalist because it fits your definition. You might like what I have to say. But literally, I'm borrowing the ideas of the people who founded it to describe why it's so great. I'm talking about what led to the fall of feudalism in a single day. That's what capitalism is. This is what brings these things out east.
Let's move back to this west. After we do some questions at the end. All right, Hody, you're getting fired up, so you're going to field this one first here. And this is a pet question mine. And it's important when it comes to what you guys were talking about near the end there, as far as private property and ownership and all that. And it's the question about the public places in today's world. There's so many people and there's things that the government have set aside, starting with, I believe, Teddy Roosevelt, specifically the national parks, and to leave a stateless society for, let's say, an anarchist capitalist society, people say, well, it would be privately owned and better maintained, and you would have to pay whoever owns it to get in. So what is the perspective on public places under capitalism and then also under mutualism or socialism, whichever one you want to field, Jack? So Hody, go ahead.
Sure. I'm so glad you asked this question, because this is really why capitalism has done the great things that it has done when it was developed as a philosophy. What's funny is, developed by Adam Smith, who was a Scot, but it actually didn't become popular in Europe and Scotland and all those areas until it traveled out east first. And it was actually Islam that embraced it first. And what they noticed, what the merchants noticed as they carried his work out and the people there embraced it, they said, well, suddenly they take their minimums. And they just say, well, you know, food, shelter, the things that Proudhon actually talked about being your minimums. And they those became dirt cheap, really easy to attain. And they started going for luxury. And suddenly they developed incense and oils and silks and better products, right? And those were the luxury items. So when people were working, they were actually working for more luxury items, not just to try and survive. This actually carried out west then, after it became popular in the east first along the Silk Road. So finally, the merchants had a problem, because when they would do business out west, they'd have to do business with a king or a duke or a duchess or a baron or somebody who owns people and land. And they said, well, you know, we want to sell to everybody because that's how we get the most out of this. You have all these regulations. You take a portion of our stuff. You take a portion of our, you know, of what we brought you. You are not a competitive market. So we have to accept that we either don't get anything from your land, take it or leave it. And because you're not competitive, you can charge whatever you would like. And so, and I am going to get into your question, because this is the important next step. Is what happened is feudalism falls in a single day when the people say, I'm not going to cut your wheat anymore. I'm not going to raise your cows for anymore. They're mine. This is capitalism. This is the reason it's called capitalism, is because they said, these cows are not yours. They're mine. And so what happened then is people who used to live in shacks and huts in these terrible rundown areas, land scarcity is something that's always created by the state. When we talk about this public land, and it was no different from back then as well. Let's bring this into the modern example, because we already know the story of Europe and how it finally became thrust into the modern era. But let's talk about it here in this current situation. Public land creates scarcity in private land. Suddenly, there's really no land issue. We can fit the entire population on Earth, comfortable living situation, into the size of New Zealand. And so what the governments do is they say, well, we own these areas and you can't live in these areas and you can't build on these areas and you can't do all these things. And even if you do, and we let you have some, it's heavily regulated and it costs, they lowball you or they highball you. They give you an X price and hey, there's no competitive market. So either pay it or leave it. And so therefore all this land has a huge, huge, base value. As opposed to being dirt cheap. See, this is what happened when the people were set free, is they're like, well, it's actually pretty much free for me to live anywhere. You know, you want to feed all the homeless, and we have a food excess on planet Earth. We have a food excess. We have a water excess. We have a land excess on planet Earth. In economy is literally the allocation of scarce resources without any alternative uses, right? When we talk about a scarce resource, land is not very scarce, and therefore it is not very expensive. The only reason it gets expensive is because somebody has to step in and make it expensive. And so we could own thousands of acres of land if we wanted to and just say, hey, this is ours, and still leave our neighbors comfortable enough. Now, if you try to grab too much land or grab your neighbor's land, there's going to be a problem. And this is where the voluntary contract comes in. into play. We say, hey, buddy, you're kind of encroaching, or you're not doing enough for the land. Literally, one of the reasons people want to own land is so that they can be productive with the capital that they have. Imagine if businesses were actually able to own their places of business and not have to pay all those fees. I mean, you might see food prices get cut in half. And that's just being a previous restaurant owner myself, if I were actually able to own the land and not have to pay for it. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. Imagine that for your living situation. Imagine that for your work situation and whatever that may apply. These public things are awful. Government should own nothing. People should own everything. Land is a non-issue until you have the state. And that's when we start to collide all over each other, trip all over each other, and say, oh, well, it costs X amount and Y amount. Capitalism is a philosophy that made the poorest of people and brought them into the modern era. And now what we see is people perverting the use, calling it capitalism when it's really just aggravated statism, and lording over them and saying, well, I'm sorry, there's really no place for you to live that's free. Try to build a homeless shelter and look at how expensive it is, even if you provide them the bare minimums. And it's simply because of what the premium that the state puts on this land. As far as an economy goes, capitalists, land is dirt cheap because it's literally just dirt. And I'm cool to turn it over to Jack from there.
Okay, so first of all, I would like to point out that a quote-unquote public property or publicly owned land is a euphemism. Government owned land. My criticism of government owned land is going to be the same criticism I have for privately owned land. Okay. It's that you're basically fencing this off and you're not allowing anyone else access to it. Regardless of whether you're using it or not. Right. That's what the state does. That's what public land is. It's essentially the state acting as a capitalist, saying, this is mine. You're only allowed on it when I say you're allowed on it. And you must act in a certain way while you're on it.
Sorry.
So, you know, the commons and public property are not the same thing. All right. That needs to be made abundantly clear. There is a distinct difference between what we would call the commons and what we would call public property. The commons is land that is owned in common by everyone who uses that land. This is the commons existed prior to socialism as an idea, right? And it was actually the start of capitalism in England was basically the seizure of the commons. The commons was seized by the state and then handed over to private individuals for ownership. And that's basically, I mean, that's you have feudalism and then you have capitalism that comes out of that, right? The problem with private ownership, the problem with private ownership of land is that essentially you have lords and serfs that will end up coming out of that. All right. Now that's not to say you can't own your home, right? That's not to say you can't own what you live on, but that's occupation and use. There's a difference there. There's a distinct difference there. There's a difference between living in a home and renting a home out to someone else. Right. So we can get into landlordism there as well. But, you know, as far as, you know, I think we're in agreement mostly when it comes to state ownership of land. Yeah, I don't believe the state should own land. I believe people should own land. I mean, if there is any land ownership whatsoever. But I don't believe one individual or one small group of individuals gets to fence off a piece of land and deny access to those resources to everyone else, which is what the state does. And that's what capitalists do. So there's a fundamental issue here, and he's laughing. I know, but in effect, this is the same thing, is my point. In effect, in actual material reality, it has the same effect, right? If the state, what's the difference if the state decides to fence off a piece of land and deny me access to it, and or a capitalist fences off a piece of land and denies me access to it. What's the fundamental difference? I'm still denied access to it. I still can't use those resources. that they didn't create, right? The state doesn't create natural resources. Capitalists don't create natural resources. But what the state and capitalists both do is deny other people access to those natural resources. You say water is abundant. Then why is water a commodity? Why is it a capitalist commodity if it's abundant? I mean, if it's abundant, everyone should have access to water, right? Yet we have Nestle denying people access to water and selling bottles of water for profit. That's capitalism.
Cody, if you want to respond there, go ahead.
I absolutely can respond, and I can respond very easily. He talks about capitalism creating lords and serfs when literally it's the very thing that overthrew it. That's the entire history. That's where the word comes from. That's the story of capitalism, is overthrowing that. You're talking about statist corporate organization, literally the definition of corporatism, the control of a state by an organization or large interest groups. When you're talking about what happened in England, where they said, oh, that's nice, you guys are ruling yourselves, yeah, we're going to step in. It's not capitalism, that's corporatism. And then because it involves the state, it's not capitalism, because by definition, capitalism can't have the state involved. You are literally talking about a history and trying to change the words around by saying, well, let's pretend that what overthrew the lords and ladies was socialism and that it's capitalism that brought it back, when history teaches us it's the exact opposite thing. So talking about scarcity, again, you brought up the water thing. Under capitalist systems, the water was free, the land was free, the food was free, because it's not limited in resources. What happened in capitalism out east? People pursued luxury resources. We're talking in the modern era, you're trying to work for your luxuries, your Xboxes, your fancy hats. If you want a giant skyscraper of a house, those things are scarce. What's not scarce? Food, water, land. All three of those things, capitalism says, yeah, have at. When you talk about them privatizing things and taking it away from ability to access, yeah, that's a huge problem, but they do that through the state. Now, you do bring up a legitimate argument with property. We talk about what's the difference between the authority. When I lock the door to my house and say, hey, you can't come in here, what's the difference between that and from a state saying, hey, you can't go in there, that's his house, and me saying, yeah, that's my house. Look, somebody can make a land grab. Grab too much, say, well, this is my area, all of it. And usually what they do is they'll go through a state and the state will be like, are you going to give us a cut of that? And they'll say, yeah, sure, I'll bribe you or I'll give you a cut of it. And then that's how you get this cronyism, right? And that's a serious problem, and also something that can't exist if you have a capitalist society. The issue is with the authority is there's no illusion of authority in the other one. That's the primary difference. If I say I own this and I write it on a piece of paper, everybody's going to question that. If I try to, well, I own all the water supplies in the world and I signed it. Well, yeah, you create this illusion of authority that you signed it, but nobody's going to pay attention to it. If you have a state that enforces it, then yeah, all of a sudden it looks like authority. It looks like the law, and people will come down on you if you ignore it. If somebody in a capitalist society decides to say, well, I own all the land of Europe, they're going to ignore you. However, if they try to say, hey, I own this little plot of land that's there for my family. Look, that's what the Sooners did. That's what it's called Sooner. They got there sooner than you. So they were there and they say, hey, this is our land. We've established a little area. We're using all of it to farm cows. We're not trying to grab more than we can protect because we have to defend our own property. There's no illusion of authority there. And that's capitalism.
Okay, so the Sooners actually stole land from the natives. Oklahoma was originally designated by the government as native-owned land. But anyway, I have two questions for you, Hody. But I want to preface this. I want to preface these questions by pointing out that I am from the Southwest, where federal land grants led to multiple range wars because there were squatters on the land that the federal government granted to these private individuals, these private capitalists. There were squatters on this land. They were capitalists. By definition, they were capitalists. Just because you work with the state doesn't make you not a capitalist.
But so anyway, they were anarchists.
The people who received the land grants?
Yeah.
No, they definitely
by definition.
They definitely weren't.
I established that at the beginning. You have
answer
your question.
Okay, but, So hold on. The federal government gave land grants to these wealthy individuals, and these wealthy individuals in turn forcibly removed these squatters from that land. These were people who were living on the land, working the land, who were actually managing and maintaining the land, and they were forcibly removed from the land by these private individuals who the state just said, hey, you own this land now, right? And so there were wars that were fought where I'm from over this, all right? So anyway, my first question is, I mean, you've mentioned the Silk Road. I'm not all that familiar with it historically, so I can't speak on it too much. If we're talking about Western Europe and the United States, the first question I have is, has capitalism by your definition ever actually existed? And my second question is, if capitalism has ever existed, has it ever existed without state intervention?
So this is similar to the story of anarchy, right? Where we talk about, well, has true anarchy ever existed? Because people love to form their own hierarchies. And, you know, if it does exist, well, no. You know, a lot of times this, you know, the state will step in and kill them and destroy them all. You and I agree on the issue of the squatters. The state says we own this land and we're going to sell it to these private individuals, whereas the people working the land, and they're going to kick them off. That's wrong. Like I said, with my example of moving west, and perhaps the Sooners aren't the best example, but with people going west and finding unoccupied land and saying, I'm going to live here and build a life here, that's absolutely capitalist. And so when the government steps in and does something else, that's wrong. Look, I'm going to say it one more time, just so that we're clear. Definition, quote, an economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by owners, not by a state, unquote. Okay, so as soon as control is happening through a state and the private owners are using that state, they're no longer capitalists. So I'm not going to defend that. People do really evil things with a state. It's like suggesting that what was going on in Europe with the monarchies was Christianity. Well, no, that's not what Christianity is. That's a gigantic perversion. Yes, there were some Catholic, you know, popes that abused their authority and did awful things with the power of the state, but they perverted their religion. That wasn't their religion. Their religion didn't teach that. In fact, the religion, as Martin Luther pointed out, preached the exact opposite of what they were doing. And so he said, you have to stop this. This is the opposite of what we're supposed to do. This is the same thing of what's happening with capitalism. I say you're doing things that are the opposite of what you're supposed to do. Capitalists preach for this freedom, for this lack of scarcity of resources, for this water, for getting access to whatever you want, for controlling your own industry. Yes, there are perverse people that have corrupted what the word means occasionally, maybe pervert it in people's minds. But let's not forget that this is a liberation movement. The reason we have ANCAPs within this movement and they stress the capitalists is because they are sick of this system, not because they're content with it. And so, yeah, if we're to answer your question, has it ever existed out west? No. In fact, we founded the country in the central bank before it was developed here. So it can't really have. We accepted it. We saw what happened. Now, has it ever existed? Yes. In fact, it actually has existed in Europe. It did exist out west before the state got there. Josiah Warren had actually attempted to set up a few, yes, as mutualist, but as voluntary, before he started doing the taxation and the voting and everything like that. He did attempt to create some of these systems, which were also remarkably capitalist. And this is where we might have some overlap with mutualism and capitalism. But people, you know, didn't like some of the, hey, I'm not allowed to share what I know is, you know, hey, why aren't plumbers allowed to talk to the ranchers again? Oh, yeah, because we might accidentally tell each other about our work and then we'll no longer be intellectual equals. That is the part of mutualism that I reject. But I don't reject the capitalist part, which says, yeah, you own your stuff and nobody else gets to step in and take it from you.
Well, I mean, I don't agree that, I mean, we're on the same page in disagreement that different workers of different trades shouldn't talk to each other. I think that's stupid.
It's just a core tenet.
I mean, of Proudhonian mutualism, maybe.
He's the founder.
All right, cool. Okay. He's the founder. Adam Smith was the founder, is quote unquote the founder of capitalism. He didn't like landlords very much, but landlordism is part of capitalism. So I think our major problem here is that you have this idealized notion of capitalism, right? Where when I refer to capitalism, I'm talking about actually existing capitalism. I'm talking about how it actually exists in material reality, whereas you're saying, well, no, that's not the way it's supposed to exist. That's it should exist this other way. It should be this other thing. And so that is, I think, the major barrier between us right now is fundamentally that. I mean, if you're saying that, no, I mean, in the United States, capitalism has never really existed. Well, I'm going to disagree with that. I'm like, we live in capitalism. We live under capitalism. I think that's what we live under. Now, you haven't really idealized the Gilded Age, which I appreciate. But the Gilded Age is what inspired people like Benjamin Tucker to be like, yeah, this is why I'm anti-capitalist, because basically the way I view capitalism is capital ruling over labor and the state stepping in to protect capital from labor, from the competition of labor. All right. Now, if you want a entirely free market, all right, where labor and capital can actually compete with one another instead of one ruling over the other and using political power to rule over the other, then I'm not really in disagreement with you. I mean, I think at this point in human history, if we were to just remove the state, like the major issue that I have with a lot of ANCAPs is they care more about taxation and they care more about the welfare state than they care about anything else. Right. And so you end up with this abolish the welfare state now. Well, if you abolish the welfare state now, you're going to end up with homeless, starving people. Is that what you want? Well, I mean, if I'm an accelerationist, then yeah, go ahead and do that, because you know what? The torches and pitchforks are going to come out at that point, and then the capitalists can't protect themselves. Right. Because they won't have the state to protect themselves. Like I said before, the welfare state is a product of capitalism because the wealth inequality that comes from the wage labor system, all right, the wealth inequality that comes from the wage labor system creates the haves and the have nots. And so you end up with people who work 80 hours a freaking week and still can't afford to pay rent. And so they need welfare. Right? What are you going to, boot them out on the street? Yeah, boot them all out on the street and then let's have a revolution. I mean, if I was an accelerationist, I'd be an ANCAP. You know what I mean? As a socialist, if I were an accelerationist, I'd promote ANCAPism. We need some way to, in any case, we need some theory by which we can move from the way things are right now to a place where things are better for everyone in general. And this is why I'm a socialist, because socialists actually have this theory. Now, once again, I'm not going to defend Proudhon. Proudhon, I mean, I'm more of an egoist, right? Proudhon was a skeptic when it came to, let's say, religion, when it came to the state, and when it came to the concept of property, right? But that's where his skepticism ended. All right. He stopped being skeptical at that point. He believed that women should be subservient to their husbands. Right. He believed that the Jews were fundamentally controlling everything. Proudhon would probably be a quote unquote national anarchist. In if he were alive today, if we were to take his ideas back then and apply them to 2019. Right. And national anarchists aren't freaking anarchists. They're basically Nazis who want to be even more edgy than Nazism. Right. They're hardcore right wing reactionaries. But anyway, so I'm trailing off here now. But I mean, I think the major barrier that we have here is we both recognize that the way things are working is not the way that they should work, right? We both definitely recognize that. Your argument is basically that if we were to just remove, I don't want to misrepresent your argument here. Do you think that if we were to just remove the state tomorrow, that completely from the economy, if we were to just completely remove the state from the economy tomorrow, do you believe that everything would just be hunky-dory and everything would be fine? Or do you recognize that state intervention in the economy has, in some ways, at least right now, is in some way necessary, because without a minimum wage, without welfare, without food stamps, without these things, people are going to be starving for resources. And when people are starving for resources and are struggling to survive, that's when people get violent. That's when uprisings happen. That's when revolutions happen.
Let's let Hody feel that question.
Right. Yeah. So the socialism mutualism thing, where we say, hey, we need some state right now just because it's kind of cool and helps level the playing field, I totally reject. So you are right to pin that on me. I want no statist, and I want no state tomorrow. The reason that's going to immediately begin to fix the problem. Look, I don't preach for a utopia over here. I think he's correct to say capitalism is a philosophy of misery because it allows misery. I think his attempt to abolish all misery and make everyone equal in intellect and physical, ability.
Okay, I don't want people to be equal in intellect. That's not even Marxian. Marx didn't even believe this, right?
Sure, like, right. No, it's a mutualist thing. It's not a socialist thing.
It's a Proudhonian thing. It's specifically, but not even just
why
mutualist.
He created mutualism.
Like you read the Tucker article I sent you, right?
Yes, I did. But let me.
Tucker was a mutualist.
Let's let Hody finish up his thought.
I get a right to answer your question because you pinned a ton of stuff on capitalism that by definition it isn't. Now you can reject Proudhon, who created mutualism, but the thing is, the difference between you and I is I'm not stabbing Adam Smith in the back. When he talks about people being granted a landlordship by the state and being able to say, this land is mine, I can rent it out to whoever I want so long as I give you guys a cut, that's wrong. And I still believe that's wrong. The difference is I agree that that's wrong. So when people look at capitalism, I say, yeah, when people do these perversion, that's wrong. When I look at the tenets of mutualism, the goal of mutualism, I think that it's wrong. And that's why we're having this debate, is I have these serious problems with it. Not just all socialism in general, although I do have some serious problems with socialism, but specifically mutual. To try to create a system that generates equality of intelligence and physical ability, again, you might disagree, but that's why he created mutualism to begin with, I find to be wrong. I think it's a bad goal. Now, to answer your question, would I abolish the state today? I absolutely would. Get rid of all the welfare states, as well as get rid of all the state things that make there be a welfare state. Like I said, there is a fake scarcity involving land, involving food, involving water that the state creates. We need a state in order for there to be any value in land to begin with. And because land is dirt, it should have no value. Like you said about the labor, there's no labor in land. It's just dirt. It's just a place for me to sleep. It's just a place for me to work. The state makes those things expensive. So would I abolish that tomorrow? Heck yes, I would. Get rid of the state today, and it makes it better tomorrow. This isn't just with land. Of course, this is with many other things. Talking about food, look at all this food we throw away. Look at the markup that we get from it. Look at how they subsidize everything. They drive food up and up and up and make it more and more and more expensive and more difficult to access, to the point where, yes, it's hard for the average American person to go to the store and afford it. But the issue is we have a net excess of food in here in America like the world has never seen before. In a capitalist system that would distribute this according to how people want it to be distributed, how I say, hey, I would like this. Can I have it, please? All of a sudden, all that excess, instead of getting thrown in the garbage because the state pours bleach into the food that you attempt to give the homeless people, they just are able to have it, and it gets cheaper and more affordable. This isn't a labor done in to defend the dukes and to defend the landlords. Capitalism was a system that set people free from them. And this is exactly why, because it made it so that they have a place to rest their heads, so that they have a place to work, so that they don't answer to anybody for those things, so that they can afford food and water at dirt cheap costs, because there really is no scarcity except for the scarcity that the state creates.
Okay. So first of all, Kay Bono, who benefits? When the state creates scarcity, who benefits from it? That's the first question that I have. And my answer to it is capitalists benefit from it. That's who benefits from it. And that's why it happens. Right. Second, how does landlordism even exist if such authority is not granted by the state? would you be able to rent a home to someone if you weren't able to threaten them with police if they decided to keep living in that home and stop paying rent? Like, this is the essence of squatters movements, which are fundamentally anarchist and socialist movements, is no one's using this home, and there's a bunch of homeless people. So we're going to go squat in this home, and we're going to let the homeless people give the homeless people a place to stay, right? Because instead of charging rent, they're going to call the cops on us, and we're going to fight the cops in order to protect these homeless people who we allowed to stay in this home. Like, you've got to understand that there are, I think it's there are 8 times as many empty homes. Maybe it's 5 times. I think there's 5 times as many empty homes in the United States as there are homeless people. All right. We could house everyone if we wanted to.
Yes.
But we don't, because capitalists want to charge rent to live in those homes. I mean, like, this is a fundamental problem with our society. But yeah, I mean, how can landlordism exist if it's not granted by the state, if they don't have a piece of paper that says I own this and you're not allowed into it? How could anyone possibly be a landlord without that government sanction?
They can't. You're right in that regard. And that's why Adam Smith rejected it. That's why I reject it too. Here's the problem that I'm having here, Jack. Here's the problem that I'm having. Just let me say this, but here's the problem that I'm having. I've given you quotes from the founder of mutualism. I've given you the definitions. You've given me the definitions. We've looked at it. I've taken it, and you just say, well, I don't really like all those pieces. And so I choose not to call that mutualism. The thing is, for me, I have given you the definitions of capitalism, and you take something evil and say, I choose to call it capitalism. Well, I can easily demonify mutualism if I just take every evil in the world and just say, that's mutualist.
Well, then we're doing the same thing. You compared mutualism to Nazism, right? So,
no, I just said that. I said that that's what happens when the state perverts your good intentions.
Well, but once again, let's bring it back to my definition of mutualism.
Okay.
My definition of mutualism is worker ownership and self-management, democratization in the workplace, okay, and property based upon occupation and use. Do you have any issue with that? I mean, you can talk about Proudhon was a piece of shit, right? You can talk shit about Proudhon all you want, and I will probably agree with you.
Then
why do you have a problem with that as a concept?
Why would you go on a debate and attempt to defend the philosophy he invented then?
Because he invented the philosophy doesn't mean that the philosophy hasn't expanded. And you know, we can get into how I'm not even really a mutualist. You know what I mean? So I'm defending free market socialism. That's what I'm defending here. All right.
As long as it's free market, Jack, I'm fine with it.
Okay. Well, so there you go. I'm not here to defend
mutualism,
specific quotes that Proudhon had. Okay. I mean, mutualism is bigger than Proudhon. Communism is bigger than Marx. Anarcho-communism is bigger than Kropotkin. Kropotkin was wrong about a lot of shit. That doesn't, you know, most ANCOMs would tell you that Kropotkin was wrong about a lot of shit. So, I mean, just to say that Proudhon said this, therefore that must be mutualism. But you're also saying Adam Smith said this, therefore that must be capitalism. Wherein, at the same time, I agree with Adam. Adam Smith was one of Marx's biggest influences, right? The labor theory of value was created by Adam Smith. Marx took it and expanded upon it, right?
Let's add the state.
Let me jump in.
Go ahead.
It seems like we found some agreements, some disagreements. It looks like everybody agrees that Proudhon was a piece of shit. So, and like we're saying, things have...
Okay, my work here is done.
Yeah. Things...
Oh, I definitely agree that Proudhon was a piece of shit.
The ideas have evolved. And Jack, you listed your definition for Hody, and Hody seems to be okay with that. Hody, run through your simple definition one more time for Jack, and let's see what we disagree on here.
Of capitalism?
Capitalism, yes.
Yeah. An economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by owners for profit rather than by a state.
Right. And so the issue that I have for this, obviously, I don't want state ownership of anything. We've talked about public property already.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, I view state ownership of property as essentially capitalistic.
Even though the definition says it's not, right?
Right.
Okay. But I mean, I just gave you the literal definition.
I know. Okay. You're giving me dictionary definitions. I mean, there's a little bit more nuance than a dictionary definition can actually provide.
Well, I provided you all of them.
I mean, what's the dictionary definition of anarchism? Chaos, basically. So, you know, are we gonna go strictly by dictionary definitions? Like that's. Well,
I'm just saying that's my most basic one. I also expanded. I gave you the six tenets of capitalism as well, and I gave you the semantic definition as well. I'm good with all of them. You can attack me on any of those fronts.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that a worker cooperative is still private ownership?
Do I think a worker cooperative is private ownership? If the workers, so the workers have all voluntarily agreed to be part of this cooperative.
Right.
Yeah, and they because they're all acting individually. They've just made an individual agreement, private to themselves. So yeah, that fits the definition.
I mean, it fits your definition, but then if
it's the definition, not mine.
Right. So it fits your dictionary definition. So I mean, going based upon that, socialism and capitalism are the same thing. Like, there's no difference.
No, there is a big difference, because the difference is socialism is there's no way there. Capitalism, you can say, hey, I voluntarily agree. Yes, let's do this business this way. We all agree. Socialism would say, well, all the businesses are going to be run this way, guys. So that's how it is.
No, not necessarily. Each worker cooperative would likely and this has been seen empirically, each worker cooperative will likely function in a different manner. It's not unilaterally saying you must function in this manner. It's saying you are free to function the way that you democratically choose to function, right? So the difference between, so we're coming back to mode of production, right? Mm-hmm. What is the mode of production? The capitalist mode of production is fundamentally hierarchical. It is top down. It is bureaucratic. It is those at the bottom have no say in the way that that the enterprise actually functions. A worker cooperative says everyone has equal say in the way that it functions. And that is socialist. That is socialist.
I'll turn it back over to the guys. I think, again, you can attribute any evil you want to capitalism, but so long as you're wrong by every single definition I provided, I don't know what else I can do for you.
Like, I mean, I'm talking about capitalism as it exists. You're talking about capitalism as you would like it.
You can call it whatever you want.
Capitalism in the way that Hody brought it forth is not in current existence. Correct, Hody?
That is correct. So every capitalist would tell you that.
We have a disagreement on terms.
No,
from both sides.
Not every capitalist would tell you that. I mean, do you own the means of production, Hody? Capitalist.
Go ahead, Nick.
I'm going to say that not a lot of people who would, not every quote unquote capitalist would agree, but I believe those people are outside of the definitions that Hody's put forth, whether they're definition or not. So we have a lot of agreements here. But
right.
I want to bring it agreements and disagreements here. So let's bring it back to the last question and see if we can find some common ground. David, do you have that question ready?
Yes. Since there is some agreement and some disagreement, seems fairly equal there. Is there a realistic and useful mixture of the two ideologies, capitalism and mutualism?
As defined by you guys.
Yeah.
Is that to Jack first or me first? I lost track.
Go ahead, Hody.
Okay. You know what? I'll even keep this short and sweet. I would say yes. Now, here's the thing. Mutualism is set up by the founder. Again, you can say it's expanded to something else. Completely rejects capitalists. In fact, says that you need to violently hunt them down and kill them. Anybody with any religious thoughts, anybody who shares information with another, you got to go and kill them, because it gets rid of your hierarchy, right? That's the only way to do it, is to flatten it out. Now, we can reject it. All right. So let's reject mutualism as the guy who set up mutualism. Now, and let's make it into what it's expanded into. We just say, hey, I'm in a worker cooperative. that we've elected to be a part of, a democratically controlled worker cooperative. And that's how I want to run a business. Of course there's agreement. Capitalists defend your right to run your business however you would like. As long as it's your stuff and you say, hey, we've decided to form a group that does that, that's going to share these profits. Of course. And the reason businesses come about is because people want to join together, join forces and make something better than you can do as an individual, right? This is why we have the assembly line. You know, you do this, you do this, you do this, and whatever comes out on the other side, we're going to share it. All right. And this was the point, and this is what Henry Ford was talking about, that the share was not supposed to be a minimum state slavery, you know, minimum wage slavery. It was supposed to be a share of the actual profits, profit, not just in cash, but profit of what you actually made, and that you have control of that type of thing. So Jack and I have already talked about this before. I've defended the right to worker cooperatives on my program before. I think they're great ideas. The reason we can't have them is because the state interferes. Difference is, between Jack and I, is he believes that that is capitalists trying to pervert that, but that is not, again, by any definition, whether you use the tech, and let's get away from the dictionary. Even if you just study it in school, I gave you the six tenets of capitalism. Tell me which one forbids you to enter a voluntary contract with somebody and make a business. Not a single one. So even if you study it in school and what it is today, that's still not what capitalism is. So my capitalist philosophy will absolutely allow any mutualist voluntary cooperative within it. If somebody wants to form that way, great. That is absolutely where we can come to terms and agreement. I said at the very beginning, almost my first line when we wanted to talk about this, is Jack and I are both advocating for something that's voluntary. So while I might get heated and he might get heated, I have no beef with Jack because he doesn't want to get up in my grill about it. He's not trying to force me to do anything. I want the state gone tomorrow. He might like it a little gone a little bit later, but we both want it gone. And that's really it. And so if he can rule it however he wants, however he sees best. For me, this is what capitalism originally meant. You get to choose the market, right? You make your own market for your own product. You get to sell it for whatever you want and have to compete with other people who are also doing the same thing. And this is why wages were higher in this capitalist society in the post-fall Europe. They went from living in these huts and squalor into these manors and into houses and having good food and access to these great things. And so that is why I promote capitalism in the way that I do, because you should have that control and nobody else. Now, if you want to voluntarily give it, we do this all the time. I choose to voluntarily give up some things in order to have a little security. I might, you know, even in an anarchist society, we would pay somebody for defense. You know, we wouldn't police, you know, but I'd say, hey, I want somebody to protect me while I sleep. I don't want to just get killed. This is what prevents us from becoming Somalia, the gigantic joke, right? We say, well, we're not saying you can't protect yourself or you can't hire somebody to protect you. So of course, yes, if you want to voluntarily trade away the dirt that you live on or your product and give it to, and give it into a cooperative, sure. And there's actually some benefit there, but by saying like, hey, let's turn this my land into a we land. However, you should still be able to own the I land. You should still have things that are yours. He's talked about the toothbrush. Of course, you should have a house, the dirt that you sleep on. Nobody should control those things. Now, early mutualists, in fact, even modern mutualists kind of reject that idea. But if Jack rejects that as long as my house is mine, he's fine in my book. And so absolutely, I can tolerate his society with mine, so long as he's cool with me doing my own thing, whatever I want to do.
Okay, so I think to answer the question, first of all, regarding is there common ground between mutualists and ANCAPs? Of course there is. I actually view mutualism as a common ground between ANCAPs and ANCOMs. I'm not actually a mutualist. I'm defending mutualism because of the fact that I'm arguing against who are you an anarcho-capitalist?
Yes. Cody?
Okay. All right. The only reason I'm defending mutualism is because I'm defending it against an ANCAP, right? Because I'm like, look, we can have free markets and we can have socialism. And yeah, those, the markets and socialism, free markets are not necessarily like, I get upset. I get pissed off when ANCAPs conflate free markets with capitalism, because I don't believe that they're the same thing. So I see mutualism as kind of a bridge between, you know, more traditional social anarchists and ANCAPs, who are more individualist anarchists, who haven't necessarily analyzed the material conditions that lead to capitalism, or that capitalism creates, right? So I guess my biggest issue with Hody is I think he's defending an ideal, whereas I'm analyzing material reality that we live in, right? This material reality that we live in, I call capitalism. He doesn't want to associate that with capitalism in any way, and that's fine. I mean, we both agree that the material reality that we live in right now is not ideal, right? We both agree upon that. So my biggest issue with him is that he's expressing this ideal that he has even said has never existed. And I'm giving this material analysis of what actually exists. And he's like, that's not capitalism though. And so it comes back to, the right wing talking point is, you know, us leftists always say, well, that wasn't real socialism. Like when it comes to like the USSR or North Korea or China, Maoist China, you know, I mean, that's the immediate talking point is, oh, you just think it's not real socialism. Well, Hody is basically telling me here now, well, that's not real capitalism. Okay, so read Benjamin Tucker, right? And who was a self-avowed socialist, right? He was a self-avowed socialist, and he saw the industrial, he lived through the American Industrial Revolution, and he said, this is shit. We shouldn't be doing this. This is garbage. Let's do socialism instead. And, you know, state socialism and anarchism, the essay I sent you, it kind of breaks that down. And then Tucker criticizes Marx, and he gives very valid criticisms of Marx in that essay. Now, I mean, we could go on and on about Marx. I think Marx's critiques of capitalism were very fucking valid. I think now whether or not you like his prescriptions is another story. Tucker obviously hated his prescriptions. I'm an anarchist, so I don't necessarily like his prescriptions, but his analysis of capitalism from a materialist perspective is very on point. To believe that I can have all of this economic power and I will not force other people into certain situations with this power, I think is naive. I think if you look at the state of the world, if you look at there are like six corporations that basically own everything. Like, if you look at this and you think, well, if we just regulated those corporations less, everything would be a whole lot better. I think that's naive. I don't see any sort of realism in that. I see idealism. And once again, like, yeah, we can abolish the state tomorrow, but if we abolish the state tomorrow, there will be a social revolution. There will be an economic revolution. The state protects capital. That's what the state does. And the state has always protected capital. And if Hody wants to say, well, I don't want the state to protect capital, then I'm in agreement with him there, right? I'm in complete agreement with him there. I don't want the state to protect capital either, but that's what the state does. That's what the state has always done since capitalism has existed. It protects the moneyed interests against those who are at the bottom of the hierarchy. It protects the haves against the have-nots. That's what the state does. And so if we want to look at this from any sort of anti-statist perspective, let alone anti-capitalist, I mean, I've told both Nick and David that you have to be anti-capitalist if you're going to be an anarchist. And I'm sure Hody disagrees with that. But if we're going to look at this from an anarchist perspective, then, or an anti-state perspective, then we have to recognize that we need to have the material conditions where those at the bottom don't just simply get crushed. And the reason there's an ANCAP to alt-right pipeline is because there are a lot of ANCAPs who just want to crush those at the bottom of the freaking hierarchy, who just hate black people, who just hate the LGBTQ community, or who just hate Jews. And not that Jews are necessarily as a group at the bottom of the hierarchy. That's one of the weird fascist critiques of capitalism, is that Jews always end up at the top of capitalism.
Well,
but if we're to analyze the actual state of things, we have to understand that everything is set up in a way that limits the power of some, or limits the power of most, and gives extreme power to a very few. And that's what I oppose.
Okay. So, yeah. Capitalists join you in that opposition because it's not capitalist. Now, I did not say we'd never have capitalism. You asked in America and out West. A lot of times that is very true. However, the whole revolution in Europe that overthrew their lords and barons was capitalists. That's the reason it happened. Out East, the reason
it was liberal.
Well, you can call it whatever you want, but liberalism, back then they called it capitalism, and they got the idea from Adam Smith.
No, so, granted, liberalism and capitalism are inherently connected.
So, yes, yeah, so they developed these systems, and they said, okay, like, let's get rid of all of this statist crap, and so they developed this capitalism. Do people try to hijack it? Has it become something else? Are there statists flaunting around saying they're capitalists? Yes, but they're wrong by literally every definition, including the one they study in school. By any measure. So the thing is what we're really having here, Jack, is I can just be like, well, you know, I know a Satanist who, you know, calls himself mutualist. You say, talk about the racist ANCAPs. They're awful people. I condemn them frequently. The thing is capitalism initially is what got the Muslims and the Christians to act peaceably among one another. And so it's funny that we have these racists now that do want to, you are correct in this analysis, take a state and force them to, you know, have this top down, you know, we give money to the people who are in the know, and somehow that'll trickle down to these people that are poor, and then these people that are disadvantaged have absolutely no hope, right? These, you know, let's face it, we look at the blacks in the inner cities, they never had hope after. I mean, you could abolish slavery all you want, but as long as you still have a very anti-capitalist, wicked, dictatorship style federalist system that rules their lives and controls the corporations above them. Well, yeah, what hope do they have? They're not allowed to live on any land, barring a lot of money. It's expensive to eat. It's expensive to drink. The thing is this was a revolution. Capitalism was a revolution, which we did have. This is not purely hypothetical. It was a very real material revolution that gave people that land and food and water and places to live and increased their standards of living and jolted us into this modern era. The problem we're having is now statists want to parade around and call what they have capitalism. just like you had the problem. This is the whole reason we talked about it earlier. Socialists that love to take over the state and call themselves socialists, you know, involuntary socialism. Marx was just saying, hey, you know what? This will be cool. Let's have some involuntary socialism. He stole Proudhon's voluntary ideas and said, hey, pretty easy. We'll just make them involuntary. So, yes, you're right to be angry about that. The whole reason I even agreed to this debate is because I know what capitalism is. You can use any definition you want, except for just take every evil thing you think you see and apply it to what you think is capitalism. That's the one I'm not good with that seems to be happening. But you can literally take any established definition of capitalism, and I will defend it. And the one thing, the goal of mutualism, the goals of it are what I oppose. I oppose to mandated end of misery, that anybody should have control over your happiness except for yourself, that there is anything. Now, again, you've rejected all this. You've already said it. I'm not going to make you defend Proudhon or whatever. He's just the guy who established the system. The system still exists in a way, and many modern mutualists, including, I preparing for this debate, read a book that still embraced this idea that we should get rid of these hierarchies and get rid of this art and replace it with liquor. I mean, this still exists in modern mutualist theory. So the idea that it's evolved into something that's great and wonderful, the apple hasn't fallen too far from the tree. And the thing is, we can call it social. Maybe there's great social programs, including voluntary social programs. Hey, I'm a fan of Mike Shipley too. We should have libertarian socialists. Yes, you should be able to choose to socialize. In many cases, that makes things cheaper. You know, that's a great idea. But mutualism is something I do have a problem with from its origin all the way through how it's in exists today.
Okay, so
Jack, let me give you 1 minute, and then we're going to wrap it up.
All right, that's fine. So when it comes to the liberal revolutions that created capitalism being a good thing, even Marx would agree with you. Like, Marx was in complete agreement there. Marx's entire inspiration was the French Revolution, right? Which was ultimately a liberal revolution, and yeah, it was violent and bloody and disgusting, as revolutions tend to be. Revolutions are like pulling, I just had my wisdom tooth pulled, it's like pulling out a impacted wisdom tooth, right? A lot of people are gonna die. That's the way revolution works. But just because the liberal revolutions were a good thing for their time doesn't mean we can't evolve past liberalism or capitalism in your idealistic perspective. And it doesn't mean that we can't have a new revolution. It doesn't mean that we can't make something better.
Well put. So I think we agree. There's a whole lot of state in the way of some good ideas and in the way of bad ideas outing themselves. I think we can agree that voluntary interaction is awesome and the right way to go. The Agora is the place where everything can compete, right? Ideas can compete, economic systems can compete, and we can see what comes out for the betterment of everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining us here. Thanks everybody watching. This was awesome. We really appreciate it. I loved watching the things get.
I just want to say, sorry. Konkin was basically an anti-capitalist.
Yes,
I just want to throw that
I'm
in
aware.
There.
Oh gosh, we've spoken stop. About this, but it's all good.
I'm just saying.
You gotta throw that last jab in there. You guys are awesome. I love hearing from you.
He got a minute in the last word. He went overtime and he still can't.
I think you guys both defended points very well. There was some confusion in definitions, but let's wrap it up. Next week we got a good friend of mine who was going to come on the show and speak with us from a perspective that was not anarchist, but he may have been swayed a little before the episode, so we'll see how that one goes. It's going to be interesting either way. That's Cinco de Mayo. Same time, 11 a.m. Pacific. Thank you, Hody. Thank you, Jack. You guys are awesome. David, always, thank you. Excellent co-host. Anything else you want
Absolutely.
To get out there before we go?
Well, I just want to say that I think what I got from most of this is that it seems the two parties wanted – They wanted their systems, and they wanted it voluntarily, and the only thing getting in the way was the state.
All right, guys. With that message.
Word. Well, hey, I love all three of you, including Hody, even though I'm going to put him up against the wall when the revolution happens.
Wow. Hey, watch out. Those capitalists make some pretty mean weapons, man.
I hope he does. Like, everyone, hey, everyone should own weapons.
That's right.
Anyway.
Oh, you're such a capitalist, Jack.
Thanks for being here, fellow enemies of the state, and we'll catch you next time.